Hey everyone, welcome to Seen That, the podcast where we talk about cult and classic movies we haven't seen until now. In this week's episode, we're discussing The Bicycle Thief and why Avril,
ciao a tutti,
hasn't seen that and much more. Hope you all enjoy. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody, and happy Valentine's Day, Av. We're recording this on Valentine's Day, but it won't come out till next week. But Av, what did you do this Valentine's Day?
Happy Valentine's Day to you too, Hill.
Thank you.
I had probably one of the most romantic Valentine's Days in a long time. I slept in late. I reheated some pad thai. I had some iced coffee. Started packing up my apartment because I'm moving in 2 weeks. Went for a long stroll with some friends and then watched this movie and bawled my eyes out.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding, by the way. This is not the most romantic Valentine's Day I've ever had, but that's, I'm kidding, of course. But all things considered, it honestly was fine. I'm not a huge Valentine's Day person. I understand why it's a thing.
Same.
But it was kind of just like any other day for me.
Yeah. I would say I agree with you. Normally, it's kind of just like every other day for me. And like this was sort of the one day David and I did something like, well, normally we go to like a dinner because sometimes it's like during the work week and everything. Right. But we went ice skating today, which was cute because he didn't want to go do that. So I was proud of him for doing that. And he made it and he didn't fall down. So that was good. He wants everyone to know because he was like really afraid that he was going to fall. But he didn't. He did a really good job. So, but yeah, basically, I just am like, if you just buy me chocolate, I will love you forever. So that's kind of just our like baseline on Valentine's Day. Maintenance.
Was David your Valentine or was Miles your Valentine?
Oh, okay. So I was David's Valentine, but like definitely Miles was my Valentine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, completely.
I mean, I think Miles was a little bit jealous that like David gave me flowers because Miles wanted to eat them. But he, you know, everything needs to be about Miles. He was also trying to eat my card. So I made him my Valentine, gave him a lot of extra treats today. So I think he was happy. He's in this room, so if you hear a meow during the recording, that's why.
I don't think we should edit those out ever. I frankly love when they're in there.
Okay.
So cute. Well, that sounds like a very nice Valentine's Day, and I hope it was a nice change of pace, because I know living together every day can kind of feel the same. So I hope it was a nice, like, we're doing something a little different.
It finally felt like we were doing an activity. I was like, I can't remember the last time we, like, went out anywhere in the city. Like, it was so nice. So yeah, and it's such a weird segue because this movie does not really have anything to do about love or or Valentine's Day in any way. We didn't sync up the holiday to like do a Valentine's movie,
but honestly, but that's fine. I'm honestly glad. I feel like
those are always like, bleh.
Yeah, I feel like I can't think of a off the top of my head. I can't think of a really good Valentine's Day themed movie. That I would want to watch that we would consider a classic or a cult classic.
Uh-huh.
And I think that would have been super cheesy and cliche if we had. And I'm really glad this has nothing to do with the holiday.
Same. Okay, so getting into it. Like I said, this week we're talking about The Bicycle Thief, or as its alternative title is known, or like the true title is actually Bicycle Thieves. So I kind of want to talk about like the dual titles a little bit later.
Yeah, I do too.
But we're talking about The Bicycle Thieves. The name that it was released as in Italy is Ladri di Biciclette, and that translates to bike thieves quite literally. And it was based on a novel written by Luigi Bartolini. So I think this is the first black and white movie we've ever discussed on the podcast. And, okay, Miles is going crazy.
a little monster, like you said, he is a little monster. On Instagram.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, this is, I think, not only
the first black and white.
The first black and white movie that we've done, and I think the oldest movie that we've covered so far. This was released December 13th, 1949 in the United States. And so it might have been released prior to that, but maybe in 1949 in Italy. And it had a budget. I thought this just was so cute because comparing budgets from other movies, it had a budget of $133,000.
Oh my God.
And it grossed $371,000 in the United States. So it did globally.
Yeah.
Because it was beyond that globally, but it had a really shoestring budget for 1949, but also for just general, like for movies, I guess. That just seems so small. So and that's really impressive. Director Vittorio De Sica, writer Cesare Zavattini. And Cesare was the writer of the screenplay adaptation because the book was Luigi Bartolini, like we said.
I do not envy you for this part, for this movie.
And it stars Lamberto Maggiorani as Antonio and Enzo Staiola as Bruno, his kid. And there's, you know, other key players, but those are the main two people that we follow throughout the film. And you can stream it on HBO Max, but the title that you'd have to look for is Bicycle Thieves. And a quick summary. In post-World War II Rome, family man Antonio Ricci ends his long bout of unemployment and finally lands a job. However, his only mode of transportation to and from work, his bicycle, is stolen from him, and he and his son Bruno begin their endless search. Dun, dun, dun. Sorry, I always do. Okay, so this movie has been on multiple lists as, you know, one of the greatest films of all time. And if not that, if it's not on one of those lists, it's definitely on lists of like important cinematic dramas for like students of film to study. So knowing, Avril, that you've offline claimed yourself to be somewhat of a cinephile.
That's going to haunt me for the rest of this podcast.
But it was offline. So, and knowing how just into movies and in a classic, like older movies you are, why, Avril, hadn't you seen that?
Fair question. I truly did not know of this movie until high school and maybe even college. So for most of my younger life, I did not know of it. And once I did learn of its existence, I knew it was sad. I was told this is a great movie, but it's a really sad movie. It's heavy. Yeah. And with that, I was like, all right, I can't just like watch it whenever I want. I need to be in a mood, ready to consume this masterpiece, this epic tale. Well, maybe not epic tale, but this important piece of art. And honestly thought I was going to be able to watch it with my dad or with my family or with a group of people, knowing, you know, if it's so important, we can discuss it afterwards, or I'll be able to watch it with somebody who has seen it. And, you know, that'll be just, it'll enrich the experience even more, which is, I feel like, a theme we've sort of talked about a lot this, not just this season, but I think this entire podcast, which makes sense given our current situation.
Yeah.
So I sort of was just waiting for the opportunity to watch this with other people, knowing how important it was, and never happened. And that's probably my fault. I probably let the whole, it's really sad, like, hold me back. You know, this is not the kind of movie you want to put on if Borat is the other option, because that's a little funnier and lighter. And, you know, this is a heavy movie. So I can understand why, if maybe it was suggested in, you know, a friend group, if we were going to watch it, that would get passed over for something that's lighter and more enjoyable. Quotes around that. So I definitely just sort of was waiting for an opportunity that never came until now.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely should have seen this sooner. And now that I have seen it, I am kind of shocked that I've waited this long, because it almost feels too long to have watched it. But I'm really, really glad I have.
Well, good. I'm so glad we picked it. And I guess leading into my like next question, I'm just curious how much you knew about the movie before seeing it, because you, I think, specifically like wanted to put this on the list, and I was really excited because I really liked this when I had seen it. So I was like, oh, interesting that you were just so excited about it. But I was curious what you knew about it before going into it. Other than that, it was sad.
But that's just it. That's really kind of all I knew. Uh-huh. It was like, it's a sad movie that's amazing. It's highly regarded. But that was it.
Uh-huh.
I knew it was an Italian movie. I knew it came out in the 40s. And, you know, it's a simple plot. Simple, again, maybe quotes around that, one could argue.
I guess linear, maybe.
Or I just, by that I mean like, a simple plot of man loses his bike and goes on a search for it.
There's not a lot of subplots. It's very like, this is it.
Right. But now that I've seen it, I would argue there is definitely more to it than just that. Mm-hmm. But on paper, when people would explain it to me, that's what I would hear. So not a whole lot. And I'd hear it referenced, you know, with filmmakers and mm-hmm. actors and other film buffs. Wow. I don't think I could give myself that title, but I would hear it referenced, but in passing of, oh, love that movie, or, you know, inspired by Bicycle Thieves, nothing really more about it.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't honestly have much going into this movie.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I think I remember I was, for this podcast, I was going back through my notes, like, of my film class in college, trying to see like, oh, it must have been in this class I watched it. I don't think it was that class. It must have been some other class that I watched this for, because it wasn't on the syllabus, or maybe they recommended it and I watched it for that. So that could have happened, but it wasn't on the syllabus. But anyway, yeah, I mean, if you heard about it in high school, that's like further back than I heard about it, because I only discovered it in college and like then, you know, was hearing about it similarly throughout in terms of like other art referencing it and everything. And have you ever watched Master of None?
Yes, the show.
Yeah.
From Aziz Ansari.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so have you watched season 2?
Yes, where they're in Italy.
Yes.
Does he make references to that?
Yes.
This movie?
So in his very first episode of season 2 of Master of None, Aziz, the first episode is, I think, one of the subplots of that episode is like loosely based on, or the plot of that episode is loosely based on The Bicycle Thief.
Oh,
I mean, it's,
yes,
it's set in black and white. It's in Italy. It's called The Thief.
This is all coming back to me now.
I mean,
it's been a while since I saw the show.
The whole thing is kind of set around his birthday. He meets this girl. They exchange numbers. And then basically the part that mimics The Bicycle Thief is that he sees someone stealing his phone, and then the chase scenes throughout the plazas, and that, you know, when they're accusing him. Anyway, we can get into it when we're like, you know, going through scene by scene, sort of. But I was just curious if you'd seen that episode, and that whole show is great. But yeah.
Yes. No, that's a great thing to mention. I completely forgot.
I watched that episode again, like right before this, just to refresh, just to see how close it was. And on his nightstand, right at the beginning of the episode, is there's a stack of books, and on the top is the book that this was based on, The Bicycle Thieves. So I thought that was a nice nod. Well, obviously he did the nod on purpose, but when I had first seen it, I was like, oh my God, I know what this is from. Like, it was so great. Well, I felt so like in the know.
I feel sort of dumb now, not realizing how many things were influenced by this movie. Like Pee-wee's Big Adventure is technically Pee-wee's Big Adventure is,
I can't remember the last time I watched that, but
a variation
my God.
Of this story. Yeah.
No way. Wait, how? Or like,
that's what Wikipedia told me.
Oh.
But it makes sense if you think about the plot of that movie.
Like,
his bike gets stolen.
Oh.
And then he goes on this journey to find it.
Okay.
To eventually. But I mean, it's different. But it is
right.
It is
oh,
clearly there's.
I like, forgot like so much about that movie. But oh my God. And no, I don't think you should feel that way at all. But also because like, how do you know? I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, I've never seen like Star Wars, but I get like certain references from it, you know? But like for this movie, it's in a way it's so obscure, kind of, that like, unless you know it's from this movie, like, you wouldn't pick up on the references. So, like, you know, it's not like you're going to see a bicycle and be like, that's the bicycle from the bicycle thing. Like, right. Whereas, like, right. if you see, like, even, like, Elsa or something, you're like, that's from the movie Frozen. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
No, that's a good point. I do think, sort of now just thinking about it, it seems like most film TV that were inspired by this movie, it's more of the plot of like, this thing was stolen and I need to find it. Or, you know, the protagonist's whole goal is to find said stolen thing that was theirs. But yeah. I can't think of any real like scene for scene, shot for shot recreations.
And I'm sure there are other than Master of None, but like,
right.
we just haven't stumbled upon them yet. Or we don't remember.
Right.
To be fair to like the amount of stuff that's out there. So,
true. There's still a lot of stuff we haven't seen.
Okay, as you were saying this, my mind like not wandered because I was listening, but I was like, oh my God, like Taken, like something's taken from, stolen from him and he has to go. And but I've never seen Taken, so we should add it to the list. That was just my whole thought process. Anyway, okay, so we know what you thought of going into it. And I just want to touch on like, before we get into details, I think it's important to bring up the film movement that this film is most known for being a part of. And that's called neorealism or Italian neorealism. Do you know anything about that? Had you like discussed that in any classes? I'm just curious.
Not in the Italian realm. Like if I had in college, which is the only time I've ever taken classes about film, and I was not a film major, so they were minors,
right.
or they were, you know, electives I could take. It was, you know, French primarily was French film I was discussing, or other kinds of cinema from other countries. It was never like Italian centric, but I have heard that before.
Okay, I'm gonna like define it for you and our listeners, and then we can like,
yeah, that'd be great.
It'll just be like a thing to sort of, I think it's important to bring up. So neorealism kind of begun by Roberto Rossellini's 1945 film Open City, but I don't know much about that movie. But anyway, it was sort of like the father of that movement. But you know, followed up by this film, and this film is kind of known for that. So the movement, basically, it's the movement to give cinema an element of realism. It's pretty much like it's characterized.
You don't say.
I know. It's characterized by stories set amongst the poor and working class. Italian neorealist films mostly contend with the difficult economic and moral conditions of post-World War II Italy. And most, like a lot of the characteristics of the films are also that they're like shot on location versus like in a Hollywood studio or any kind of studio. They were cast with unknown or non-actors, basically. So fun fact, Lamberto Maggiorano, who plays Antonio, and Bruno, both were not actors. They were like, Lamberto was like actually a factory worker that they cast. And Enzo, who plays Bruno, was, I think, just some boy that they, you know, as they were setting up for filming one day, they kind of found him on the street.
He was selling flowers with his dad.
And he was like watching them set up. And I mean, he has such a face. I mean, it's so
cute. He's so adorable.
I know. So anyway, I just thought those things, I'm not an expert on that theory or that movement at all, but I just, going into this movie, I felt like those were important things to bring up because of, you know, the themes and what it showcases. And I feel like that's partly why it's so important. So knowing all of that, what were your overall thoughts and first impressions?
This movie is amazing. It's a masterpiece. It's heartbreaking. It's devastating. It's beautiful. I love it. I absolutely love it. I'm still processing it, but it was amazing. I'm a little bit mad at myself I didn't see it sooner.
I was so surprised because I felt like this would be like, you have to, you would tell this to me. I'd have to watch this.
I absolutely love this movie. And I'm glad that we did another international movie, In the Mood for Love, in our first season. And it was the same thing. You had seen it and you were recommending it to me. And I loved that movie. So I'm glad that this is the second time and same situation. Yeah, this is an absolute beautiful piece of art. It's truly, it makes complete sense that it's basically on everybody's, by everybody I mean critics, filmmakers. It's a classic for a reason. This is a masterpiece.
Yeah. And I think like there's moments where it like slows down, but there are like, there's just so many like individual like kind of scenes or sequences that like get at, you know, the desperation and get at like just the mindset of like everyone during this time. I mean, it was like Italy wasn't necessarily on the good side of the war. And then, you know, Germany kept fighting there, and then it just left their economy like devastated. So like it just, you know, you think of Rome as like, you know, the Colosseum, and right now it's like, oh, Roman holiday, everyone's so, but like, you know,
which I have not seen.
That is also, that's a fun movie. That's a fun one. Maybe for next season. But yeah, you kind of think of it as this like romantic, powerful, like maybe back when like place, you know, the Roman Empire. And then to see it in this way is just really interesting. And I think important.
In a way I can appreciate it's a non-romanticized or romantic portrayal of the city that is so heavily romanticized. And, you know, there's an entire movie that came out a couple of years ago, I think called like Beautiful or The Beautiful City. And it's about Rome.
Oh, really?
The complete name is escaping me, but the Italian translation for in English is something like The Beautiful City. And I know lots of people who say their favorite city is Rome, and they've are well traveled and have been to lots of beautiful places around the world. And I've never been to Rome actually, but I
was gonna ask. Yeah, I have like once. I wasn't there for very long, but and it was at a time where I had been living in, I was in Italy for like about a month, and then I had been in other cities, and it was great. But I think there were other cities that I liked more in Italy. But that's not to say that Rome isn't great. I just compared to all the other cities, it felt, you know, I mean, it's bigger, it's more modern. It just didn't feel as like old and charming. And yeah. Miles is trying to open the door to the room that I'm recording in, you guys. If you can hear that squeaking. That's him trying to get in. Oh my gosh.
In a way too, it's like this could happen. This, you know, this is sort of a universal story, like a story of struggle, a story that regardless of whether you're in Italy or in America, like I could see this being a movie from the 1930s about the Great Depression and struggling. Like this is sort of, this has universal ties. So that being said, again, I found it in a way refreshing to see a movie about or taking place in Rome, because it doesn't really look like Rome.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going by all of those famous sites, like you said, the Colosseum and the fountain and, you know, tons of other places you can go in Rome.
Right.
Because it's not about that. It's about this man and his son's struggle to get back what is theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did you think it was paced? Like, were you like in, or were you like, okay, this is like a little slow? I'm curious.
I thought it was paced quite well. And you know, at times it's definitely, you're trying to, I found myself guessing what is the director trying to show us? Because this conversation is dragging. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just, the conversation is still going on and it doesn't seem like any new information is being revealed. Specifically when Antonio is trying to, hey, Miles.
I know. I'm sorry. Miles just jumped up, like practically ending the call on the iPad that Avril and I are talking through.
I think Miles has some strong opinions about bicycle thieves and he wants to share with us.
Maybe he was a bicycle thief in a past life. Maybe he was like an old Italian man.
Yeah.
Were you an old Italian man, Miles? Oh my God.
I can see it.
He's just staring at me. Anyway, sorry.
The scene in particular I'm thinking of is, where Antonio is trying to convince the old man who yes. he saw in a scene prior talk with the bicycle thief, or, you know, the thief of his of who took his bicycle, mm-hmm. and trying to convince him to take him to where the thief is, and the guy's not budging, and they're in mass, they're in a church.
I know, I'm like,
or they're at mass, I should say.
Yeah.
But it just, it keeps going back and forth of like, come on, no, you have to come with me. No, I'm not going. And just sort of that ping pong. But I didn't find it to be a negative or taking away at all from the storytelling. But I think it shows more of just like the desperation. Mm-hmm. And again, more of this realistic, yeah. like, yeah, in real life, this conversation probably would play out like that. Of this guy pleading with this other guy, please come with me. No, I'm not going to. And that's a more realistic portrayal of how that would go down. That happened a couple other times, even without dialogue, of just some scenes, like especially at the end, mm-hmm. Where you go back and forth between him looking at the bike,
oh my God.
And the crowd and all the bikes at that stadium. That to me was
so anxious.
Yeah, but that's effective.
Yeah. Oh, and that so was so clearly effective.
So it's doing a lot of work without having to say anything. Verbally by the actors.
Right.
So I just, to answer your question, I think, yes, at times the pacing is different, but I think overall it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't find myself bored or distracted or confused. I found myself quite engaged and quite invested the entire time.
Yeah, I was never confused either. I guess like I was more just like, oh, like, why do you keep staying there? Or like, you know, like it was one of those things where you are like trying to almost like tell him what to do through your mind. And you're like, you know, even though I'd seen this before and, you know, you're like, oh my God, you know, I think it was like, you know, a mass for the homeless. It seemed like they were all homeless men because they were giving them lunch and things like that. And a lot of that community stuff and outreach happens through churches. But I was like, oh my God, you're like interrupting this. And then, you know, it's like, you don't know someone else's background, especially in that time. And it's like, everyone's kind of desperate. Right. So, you know, before we sort of meet up with him at the church, you kind of think like, oh, who's this shady old man who's like, did this deal with this kid who stole the bike? Like, you know, I mean, but it did go on long, but you're like, you know, he's clearly very desperate. And
right.
other things like that, too. Like, I think maybe it was just, like, the times. It's, yeah. like, you could kind of just go up to, like, someone and ask about someone that they were talking. Or, like, I don't know. I think, like, in some ways, things were less suspicious back then, in a way. Like, you know, there wasn't so many, like, modes of, I don't know. It just seemed like things were a little bit simpler. So it's like, I saw you do this and talk to this person. Like, there's no like getting around that, like, that's kind of what happened. So, and it wasn't like they saw it in a fake photo or some weird thing that someone read. So like, you know, I think a lot of it, again, is like just about the times. And I guess a question I have then is like, were there any things you... Obviously, this movie's an old movie, so saying that, like, oh, what made it obvious that it didn't, that it's old is weird. But I guess, like, what things stood out to you that would not have flown today, that sort of were kind of put in there, or maybe were okay in that time?
I think the one thing that sticks out to me the most is when Antonio hits Bruno.
Yeah.
Slaps him.
Yeah.
That is a hard scene to watch. And I found more for the fact of clearly Antonio loves his son and he's just so frustrated. And it's unfortunate that out of this frustration that he does that to him because it clearly upsets Bruno.
Yeah.
But okay. I know. I don't know if that scene... I can understand why it's in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think it works. Even though, again, it's hard to watch. I don't know if something like that would get put into. I don't know if that, like you said, would fly today. Would be something we would see in a modern movie.
Yeah, and yeah, not to like give it excuses or anything. That was definitely one of the scenes that I thought of as well. And like, you know, he does this like one thing out of rage, and you know, again, not making excuses for him, but it was a different time, and even showing that or you know, was more okay, and versus like even doing that off camera, you know, like that's sort of an interesting thing too. And then also another thing I thought of is like some of the things, you know, the wife isn't in it for very long.
Yeah, I was thinking of that also. That they
were talking to her or that were said to her, I was like, oh, that wasn't good.
I was thinking of that stuff as well, which, yeah, there's only a few scenes to pick from. And again, it's hard watching any movie from a previous time now with the, you know, metaphorical lenses that we have, because we are going to pick up on things that we wouldn't see today, or things that we as a society have changed our minds on, that we've evolved from. So it's always sort of, that's always going to be kind of tricky and hard to not notice. But I don't think that should take away from the movie and its message, and how, while hard again to watch those scenes or those actions, how they sort of are important to the movie itself.
Yeah, it wasn't that they were just like doing it just to do
right.
it. And you do get the sense that he's not a violent man. Like he seems like nice with his wife, and he seems, you know, like they love each other and they have two kids and, you know, they're playful together. And then, you know, in this just desperate fit of rage, you know, he's been trekking around all day. I mean, like, what parent hasn't, if they haven't, you know, hopefully not like laid hands on their children, like what parent hasn't like just then yelled at their kid, you know, like, I equate it to that. Like the action is different, but like, I guess I'm equating it to like, just having like, you know, someone yell at their kid in like a grocery store. You're like, oh, this parent's had a day, like leave them alone.
You know?
So
And even though it's never outright said, I do think you can see, I think the way the director portrays Antonio after the fact, you see the sorrow on his face. You see the regret. You see the remorse.
That's true. You get that it's a moment. Yeah. It's not just like he does it and then they like keep walking. Like, you know.
And then the scene following that, the eating the mozzarella sandwiches, like that's a heartbreaking scene in of itself, but it's also really sweet and tender and kind of a nice change to what we did just see.
I know, it's weird. Like he, kids then were treated basically as adults, but also not. Yeah. Like there's so many moments where this kid is like weaseling his way through like all this these crowds of like, you know, larger men, and they're like, "Get out of here, kid!" Like whatever. And I mean, I said it with like a New York accent. Like no, they're not like, "Get out of here, kid." But basically,
scram,
kid. and and they're like, but then you know. I forgot that like in the first scene where like the kid is on the bike with him, he like drops him off at work. Like he drops the kid off at work. I was like, wait, I totally had forgotten that. And then he also, you know, like gives him wine. I know that's sort of like a, oh, don't tell your mom thing, but he's like giving him wine. He's telling him about the money he could have made. Like he's talking to him and treating him basically like an adult.
Right.
For a lot of it.
Well, in a way, Bruno kind of is his friend in this movie, too.
Yeah.
Which, Bruno plays a lot of different parts for Antonio.
Yeah.
His friend, his co-searcher, his son, his assistant. Like, he does a lot for him.
Yeah. And I think he also plays different roles, like, in terms of, just in the film. Like, he obviously plays the son, but I feel like sometimes he's the one who gives, like, a lot of comic relief. And he's the one who, I don't know, just breaks up a lot of that tension.
No, that's a really good point. And I mean, speaking too of things not that maybe we wouldn't see today, which I think we should also recognize, when I say things we wouldn't see today, I'm talking mainly about American movies.
Yes, that's true. That's so, mainly again, the lens that we're looking at this through.
Right. Bruno also gets, you know, hit slapped by other men.
That's true.
You know, he's sort of like we were just saying, you know, he's getting told to shoo away, get going, get gone. and is like pushed aside. Is he's bonked on the head by a priest?
I know. Think, at one point. Oh my god, that was so ridiculous.
Yeah. So he's, you know, again, it's a little jarring at first, I think, but I think it was more accepted then. I don't know if that's still the case now, but I think that was a cultural thing. That was just how adults showed at times their feelings towards kids if they were being annoying.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier the scene where Bruno gets dropped off at work.
Yeah.
And this kid is like 8 years old. I was already crying. We're like 17 minutes into the movie and I was already bawling my eyes out.
Oh my God, just, really?
I think... I know it's Valentine's Day. I don't think that's the reason. I just think it's like other things hitting me and watching this movie, which is kind of ironic given how I was like, I know it's a sad movie, so I just like need to be prepared. And like, fuck that. I was probably always going to be bawling my eyes out. I was probably always going to be really sad watching this. So why did I wait so long?
Yeah.
But I think this shot right before that, seeing Bruno and his dad, I mean, that is probably like the happiest moment until everything goes wrong. And it was just, it was really beautiful. And that just made me cry. And
when they're like getting ready for work.
Getting ready for work.
I loved that. It was like she made them egg sandwiches. Like right. He like shuts the windows again because the baby was awake, but like the baby was supposed to be sleeping, you know? Like,
right.
I mean, and just the idea that like.
They're going to be set for life, or at least for a while. And that what a relief that is for them.
Yeah, and even going back further, like when, you know, when they're actually like the wife immediately is like, all right, what do we have that's the most valuable? I guess the sheets and like or whatever was part of my dowry, and like I think they did this on purpose when they're at the I guess it's a pawn shop or at the you know
pawn thing.
It seems like a large pawn shop, but they basically have a window and they like give them the sheets and then he tells them how much they get. And then, you know, it shows him climbing up this huge like shelf of just endless sheets. And it kind of hits you like, oh, how many people have to like just sell their sheets like because they don't have anything else. Like that's what really hit me with that. And like. Yeah, the idea that they were just so happy, like, going to work, like, with their egg sandwiches. Is like
I know. Ugh. So, yeah, I'm like, God damn it, this is the happy part of the movie, and I'm already crying.
Oh, my God.
And then I was just sort of in and out of sniffles the rest of the movie, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, warning to anybody, if I haven't made this clear, this is a sad movie.
Yeah, it's
you sad. Probably will cry, so just be ready for that.
It's, like, doesn't have a happy ending. So.
Which I don't know if we want to talk about that now.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get into the ending now.
As heartbreaking as the ending is, I kind of didn't think this movie was going to have a happy ending. And I was quite relieved in a weird way that it didn't. Even though I would say seeing the man whose bike Antonio steals ends up stealing, seeing him have compassion for him, it's probably more like pity. Let's be real. I think. But that, you know, that moment was, I think, really powerful and is sort of, I think, the only real positive you can take from the ending, even though, again, it's genre. It's realistic. Like,
yeah,
he doesn't go to jail, but now they're probably going to starve or really struggle. And the son just watched his dad get beat up and humiliated. And
I know.
It's really heartbreaking. But I don't know how you make that ending a happy one. He gets his bike back and everything's okay because that probably wasn't, again, reality for a lot of people. This probably happened all the time.
Yeah, it wouldn't be as powerful or poignant if, like, oh, great, he just found the guy and the guy gave the bike back or the police helped him. Like, it shows just so many, like, angles of, like, coming at this. Like, you know, for the people, like, on the street where, you know, it's not the very ending, but, like, towards the end when... you know, he sees the kid who stole his bike and he goes and then they get, you know, that crowd around him. For those people, it's just this random guy like telling their neighbor, accusing their neighbor of stealing something. I guess the idea, maybe this is just us in this day, but like the idea that like, how well do they know this kid? Right. And they're going to be like, hey, like, you must be mistaken. Like, are you sure? Like, I guess just like knowing now or like just having the knowledge that, you know, there's so many people that don't deserve to be in prison these days or in jail or just wrongly accused of things mm-hmm. that just like, I mean, so I guess that they're like, hey, you're wrongly accusing him. But then it's like, I guess just be sure. Like every, like, I hate that this kid feels so like, you know, that he can just lie to this man's face. But then you see where he's living. So you're like, he probably got money for this bike too. Like,
right. Well, I think it's, I got the implication that he had already sold it. And that's why they couldn't find it in the house.
Oh, yeah.
He probably needed that money. I mean,
he probably
also
sold it that day. He probably didn't even bring it home. So
or right after we see him with the old man.
Right.
He probably goes and sells it after that interaction. But I, to your point, I was sort of convinced of him being innocent. And I went back and we don't watch VHSs anymore. But I stopped at that point in the movie when Antonio's questioning him. I was sort of confused myself. I'm like, is this the guy? So I stopped it. I went back to that scene where it gets stolen. And turns out it is him.
It is.
And then it makes the rest of it just all that more, again, heartbreaking. I'm going to keep saying that word because I feel like that's a very accurate feeling that I had at least watching this. It's just, God damn it.
I know. My heart stopped. Like, I had forgotten how exactly the bike was stolen. And they totally get you, though, when you're in, when the wife goes into that, sorry, there's sirens. Can't help that. I live in New York.
Living in the big city. Hey.
Hey. So when the wife goes to that like fortune teller woman, and you know, it keeps like panning back to the bike and these kids like kind of coming near the bike. And I keep being like, oh, don't get too close to the bike. Like, you know, and then I had seen this before. I had completely forgotten how the bike was stolen. And then I was like, oh, right. It's when he's painting the posters. But like, I was like, oh my God, don't go up to the thing. Don't go. But that just shows how like great the sequence is in terms of movie making, where it like kind of wants you to think that it's going to be taken. Obviously, maybe then it would have been too obvious, but it's great. I mean, I don't know.
No, I completely thought that also. I was like, is it going to happen right now? Wow.
Yeah.
And then I kind of forgot about it. And again, I'm glad they really kind of, it's a gut punch in a sense, because they like really build up the happiness and the relief and the exhilaration the family feels about this, having this bike is literally their key to everything.
Yeah.
And all of that gets built up to then come kind of crashing down.
I just wonder, like, he went back to the employment office, not to like the guy with the posters. Like, so many things in this. I'm like, could you not? Does no one else get their bike stolen from this job? Like, can't you just say like, my bike was stolen? Like, can you pay me and I will buy my own bike? But like, you need to like, but I'll like do the job on foot today. Like, I don't know. It just seems like there could have been like, I know that's not the story, but like in my mind, I'm like, things were done in such a way back then where you're like, couldn't you have just gone to like wherever? Or like things were, I guess, a lot less loosey goosey. Maybe I don't know if they're loosey goosey nowadays, but you know, go to right to the source, ask the guy if you could like get paid for the day and like buy another bike or something.
Do you mean him going to the employment office instead of the police office, the police
or no,
department?
So he, you know, gets the job at the employment office at the very, very beginning.
Right.
When they're all like on the steps. But then he is told to go, I think once he has the bicycle, when he's carrying it, he goes basically, I think, to where, you know, he gets the supplies for the posters. And the guys are like, put the bike down. Like, what do you think, something's going to happen? And like the guy like checks out that he was sent here by the employment office. And he tells him when to show up. And I was like, couldn't you go to that guy and be like, hey, my bike was stolen? Like, I don't know.
I wonder if it maybe comes from a sense of fear of, I want to get this figured out for myself because I don't want to fuck this up any more than it's already been fucked up.
Yeah.
So I'm maybe it's like risk management to an extent of like, I just want this bike back because it's mine. And
like, they'll find someone else with a bike versus like letting me wait a day. Like, probably.
So I wonder if it was that. Also, who knows how helpful they would have been. They could have been true.
It seems like no one was ever helpful.
And that exactly. And that kind of brings me to a point I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
It does sort of seem like nobody cares about this issue for him. Like, it's really just kind of him and Bruno on their own. Everybody's annoyed that, you know, they're intruding, they're talking too loud, they're disrupting the mass service, they're accusing their neighbor of a crime they didn't commit.
People cared about it for the neighbor. And there were two separate scenes where Antonio runs after the guy on the bike, and he's yelling, thief, thief. And then when that happens to him, everyone just, you know, it's
right.
heartbreaking.
It's a pile on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, throughout the movie, different people, different scenes, the reaction to Antonio expressing concern and this is my situation and I need help, he's just completely dismissed or literally kicked out or assaulted for letting people know that he needs help.
Yeah.
And that this thing happened to him. It kind of does feel like, in a way, society has failed him. And it maybe the larger message, again, I'm just thinking out loud here, maybe the larger message, if that was one they were trying to depict in the movie, is, you know, society has sort of failed a lot of people. And that's why so many people are sort of down on their luck and are struggling, is like they don't have the support systems in place that would maybe help them get out of these financial struggles.
Right. It's why, like, he needs the bike so much. It's why that kid probably steals the bikes. And it's why, you know, even at the end when, you know, you brought up the fact that when that guy says to him, oh, you know, just, you know, I'm not going to, like, press charge or, you know, I'm not going to pursue this. He just sort of lets him go. He does say in that interaction, like, this is the only thing I have. And it's like this is everyone's situation.
Right. And everyone's out for themselves.
It sucks because we're, you know, invested in this man and this boy and because we've been following them. But, like, this is so many people's situation. So, like, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's just heartbreaking.
I'm glad you clarified that because I honestly wasn't sure if that was Antonio saying that or if it was indeed the guy whose bike he tried to steal.
I think it was the guy who.
Which, yeah, like you said, it emphasizes or it drives home the point that Antonio is one of so many.
I know.
Who is struggling and who it's that awful. Bike is their lifeline, is their key to employment.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just like, yeah, getting around the city, walking to get versus walking to get groceries or whatever it may be. Right. Like, yeah. Oh, it's so heartbreaking.
I think another reason I was sort of so emotional watching this was it's hard not to see Antonio and again, kind of who else we can assume is also struggling in this movie and think about all the people that have been struggling during COVID.
Yeah.
Whether they've been unemployed or they've been struggling to find work. And then even sort of broader than that of just struggling with loved ones who have maybe had it, who have maybe passed or have survived but are still struggling with maybe symptoms. Just sort of like the whole, it's hard not to watch this movie, I found, and think about what we're currently experiencing.
That
universal theme of struggle, hard not to connect while watching.
No, absolutely. That's a great point to bring up. Like, you know, I am like a freelance worker right now, but like, you know, there was a lot of weeks during COVID when like I wasn't sure what the next thing would be. And I'm far from, you know, broke. So I'm really blessed in that. But, it makes me think like, okay, like how long would I be able to sustain this? And then I, you know, if I did get like a gig for a week or two, it made me feel guilty. Like, oh, someone probably needs this more, you know? So it's like, while I'm following my own story, like, what are the stories that we're not seeing? Or like, did I take someone else's chance? You know, basically, if I get the bicycle, who's not getting the bicycle? And it's not, you know, it's in these times, it's hard to like not think about things it's a zero sum game because like, you know, so I get a position or someone else gets a position doesn't mean that there isn't another one or something else. But, you know, it's just that type of thinking. And yeah, like knowing that there are so many people in like dire situations, like, you know, being evicted or, you know, mm-hmm. not being able to pay rent and or like losing their businesses. I mean, it's completely awful. And it is this moment where like you go, everyone or, you know, most people are really desperate right now. And, mm-hmm. you know, for some people to be, you know, for the government to be arguing about like, how, you know, little fucking things about the stimulus checks, just keep going. Like, just keep like trying to do the things, like stop getting bogged down. You know, it's like,
send us the money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I mean, I don't know exactly what the like, how they like were able to get out of this in post-World War II Italy, like with that economic recession. But I guess it's just like, you know, the government needs to kind of do better by its people. And, you know, uh-huh. there were so many people at that employment office. And I think there is one scene where they were like, you know, oh, like we can't give jobs to everyone. What were they saying at that meeting? I should have gone back. And they were like, they were basically saying like, should we just send people money? Or like, no, we need to like provide jobs so people can work versus sending them money. I think that was what they were talking about.
I can't remember. In that first scene?
Not in the very first scene. It's like when he loses the bike and when he goes back to the employment office, there's like a meeting going on and they're like, should we give people money or should we like just try to send people on jobs, just menial jobs, because so we don't have to send them money? Like, it was something like that. And I'm not quoting it exactly right, but I thought, I was like, that's weirdly like close to the situation that we're all in now. Like, yeah.
Maybe I'm misremembering it. I literally just watched it hours ago, so I don't know why my memory's failing me already. But
I mean, it was in Italian. It's hard to like watch the, like what's going on behind and then like read the thing. So it's...
Which, if I may quickly digress.
Yeah.
Was this movie dubbed? Because the audio did not match up sometimes.
It was
sometimes.
So bad. I was like, did they even like record this in Italian? Like, what did they like? It was, it may have been dubbed. Like, I don't know.
I think it was, because in reading up on it after I watched the movie, and I do love that fact that the director chose all amateur actors. I really do think that's an aspect of the movie that makes it so great. I guess because they were amateur, I don't know why, but they, I guess, did decide, maybe that was why, is they decided to dub them, is maybe their accents were too thick, or they, I have no idea, but I don't know if the amateur,
like, emotion wasn't there, but I'm making that up too. Like,
I have no idea.
Interesting fact. But yeah, I noticed, I was like,
I guess that was like a little distracting, if I had to go back to your previous question, because yeah, that like the weird dubbing with the subtitles, it's like, I could have easily missed that entire scene you were just talking about because I was trying to find or, you know, pay attention to what was going on.
Yeah, you're like, who's actually saying what? Because nothing's, like, syncing quite right. So,
right.
Yeah.
You're not talking about the cave scene, like, when they're in the cellar?
The cave scene. Yeah, no, I am.
Okay, I didn't think that was the employment office.
It's, like, underneath the employment office. Because the wife finds him there, right?
Right, the guy with the glasses. Who's like, hey, you in the back, shush.
Yes.
And then he goes to like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. No, yeah, I do remember this.
It looked like a cave. It was a little weird.
Yeah, or some like
dirt floor. Yeah, it was definitely a basement or something.
Yeah. No, that is a really good point. And I was sort of thinking like this. That was one of the first things where I'm like, this sort of reminds me of what we're currently going through. Like debates between $600 and $14,000 checks.
I know. It's like...
ridiculous.
It's like, yes, like, great, we would love to have more, but like, you need to like come up with I'm digressing again, but like, you need to come up with a timeline on how long you're gonna argue this for, and like, what time is like not realistic, but what time is like, I am not finding the right word now. How much time is appropriate to do this for before it's so ridiculous and you just pick a number mm-hmm. between that and that. And who the fuck cares, and send us money? Like, who the fuck cares?
Yeah.
I mean, like, yes, we care, but like, that is, it just gets to the point where you're almost like, just pick a number.
Or like, keep sending us money while you're figuring out the other things you need to figure out.
Yeah.
Put us on a direct deposit plan.
I know.
Every month, everybody gets blank. I sound like a Yang Gang person.
I love Andrew Yang. Andrew Yang. He's running for mayor of New York. Woo!
That's right.
Mayor of New York? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Mayor of New York now.
I'm on the technically Yang the train second for mayor of New York for sure.
That's technically like the second most powerful position in America. I've heard that. Like, obviously, that's
it's pretty. One could argue, yeah,
it's but it's up there.
It holds. You're
right.
Yeah,
yeah. That and like governor of California, because you have to manage an economy the size of France.
Yeah,
it's like the eighth largest economy in the world.
Crazy.
Yeah. Thank you for jogging my memory. But yes, I agree that that scene does sort of hit close to home.
Yeah. Was there anything else that stood out to you in this, or just points you want to discuss, like themes about the film?
I think another big takeaway for me was, and again, another reason I was so emotional watching it, I think it's really hard to watch your parents struggle, to watch them fail, because I think depending on your relationship with them, maybe not, they sort of are your protectors. Mm-hmm. You look up to them. They're kind of invincible and maybe can do no wrong in your eyes, especially when you're young, when you're Bruno's age.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what really got me throughout most of the movie, is just seeing Antonio have struggle after struggle within this larger struggle, and his son right there to witness it all was really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
They, you know, they try to protect us from evil and from bad things happening to us, but like, who protects them?
Yeah. That's so heartbreaking.
I know.
No, it's like really, I think one of the most, I didn't cry during this one, but I think I did the first time, and it was particularly like when, you know, that scene at the end again, where like he's going back and forth between like the game bikes and the bike that's like kind of alone on the street, and you just get this feeling like, oh my God. And then does Bruno understand what's happening? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when he sees him being chased by everyone on this bike that he didn't have 5 seconds ago, you know, it's like why he tells him to get on the streetcar and it was full. And oh my God, like seeing, you know, your parents, or like, you know, him seeing like a shameful moment for his father. Yeah. Is like heartbreaking for the both of them, and they're both, you know, upset at the end. But then, you know, he grabs his hand and then he holds it tighter, and I just, oh my gosh, it's like he then in that moment I go, oh, he kind of does understand, what a good kid. But you just go like, there's no words. You just sort of sigh with sadness,
exactly,
and shake your head like, oh. It's heartbreaking.
Exactly. I know I keep saying that word, but I really don't know how else to describe.
Yeah. I mean, like, I want to ask, what would you have done in Antonio's position? I guess, like, you know, right from when the bike was stolen, and then particularly in that moment of deciding between which kind of, which way to steal the bike, basically.
I would have told him, sorry, Kane, we can't admit you onto the ship. You've been infected with an unknown organism.
I was like, wait a minute, what?
No, sorry, just the moment you asked me that question, I'm like,
I asked you this last week. I did get it. I was like, what would you do? Yeah. This is sort of a moral, like, thing where it's a dilemma. He's a good man, and people will be like, I mean, maybe not now, but like maybe back then people were like, well, he's back. It's like he stole the bike. And you're like, it's like that question, like, would you steal bread to feed your family? You're like, right. Like,
well, and that's what's so fucked up. It's like he's literally been pushed around.
Yeah.
By society and by other people trying to do the right thing, trying to get help, and nothing's come his way. So it's completely understandable why he's driven to take the bike. And
absolutely.
I have to say, watching that scene, I was sort of waiting, wanting him to take that bike.
That bike? Like,
yeah, the one that he ends up taking. I was like, you need this.
Okay.
So, and to clarify, is that whole scene, are we supposed to be seeing him debate which bike to take, the one that's alone and the one that, and one of many that are parked, for the Coliseum?
Yeah, because I don't know if
stadium.
I don't know if I felt it on my first watch, but I felt it on watching it the second time, where I was like, oh, it would be so easy to take
'cause who's
like one from 1,000 bikes, especially when you hear the big cheer and right. you could pretend that you, I mean, this is like, I'm getting so like, what would I do? Like you would pretend that you walked out of the stadium and you would just be like, oh, I have to go home early or whatever the heck. And you just take one. Like, I mean, that's so terrible that I thought about that, but I was like, it'd be so easy. It'd be much easier for him to do that. And he goes for the lone one that was, you know, it was closer. It was, you know, more discreet potentially. But I feel like it would have been actually easier to get away with
yeah.
the other one. Which is not to say that he would have, but it's just heartbreaking. Again.
Okay, yeah, that was something I questioned while watching that scene. But he's become the thing he... you know, was after. He becomes a thief
right.
in, you know, at the end there.
Yeah.
Even though that almost feels too harsh of a word to label him. But then, you know, again, the guy that steals his bike initially, he's having a hard life too. You know, everyone's struggling.
Yeah. Although like that kid, I mean, I know you like see the one room he and his family are in and I get it, but like he was so smug. Like there was no like remorse on him at all. Like I know.
He pretends to have a seizure.
But do you think he really did have a seizure or did he pretend?
I read the Wikipedia plot to make sure I didn't miss anything. Okay. And it says that he, like, feigns. He, like, pretends to have a fit.
I mean, he just, like, didn't seem sorry at all. And to, like, straight lie to this guy's face when, like, I just got annoyed at that kid. And then I felt bad being annoyed because, like, you know, you see where he's coming from. But I was like, I don't feel bad for you. Like, I felt bad that I didn't feel bad. Like, yeah.
No, I agree. But
quick to your point about, like, you know, Antonio becoming the very thing that he's sort of been not seeking revenge on, but like, yeah, he's been after chasing down this whole time. That kind of leads me into, I guess, something I brought up at the beginning about the title of the movie. And I want to just ask which title do you prefer for this movie? Because I think it plays into that point a little bit. Do you prefer The Bicycle Thief or Bicycle Thieves?
Almost always ever known it to be The Bicycle Thief. And it was only in getting ready to watch this movie that I discovered it was originally called Bicycle Thieves.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I prefer it Bicycle Thieves because that's how it was intended.
Uh-huh.
That's how it translates to from the Italian title. But I don't think of Antonio, and I don't think of the other character. His name is escaping me.
Vincenzo? Oh, I don't even know. I forgot. I didn't even write it down. It's so terrible.
The thief, yes, which I think it's how he thief. Is billed. Yeah, the original thief. Like, when I think of this movie, I don't really... their circumstances made them thieves. They right. aren't born malicious people trying to screw over others, but they are struggling and this is how they can survive.
Right.
But it's at the expense of each other.
Yeah.
Part of me just kind of feels like everybody's a thief. And I don't know if somebody says that in the movie. Maybe I'm misremembering.
Oh, maybe.
But I feel like a character mentions like everybody is sort of...
No, you might be right.
Some sort of same sentiment of like everybody's
no,
something
I,
to that.
Like the old man. Same, yeah. I feel like I know. I don't know what the line is, but I think you're right.
I'm glad that brings some semblance to you. Because
yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but
so in that regard, I'm like, you know what, Bicycle Thieves is, I think, a more fitting title.
So yeah, I had like before known this as The Bicycle Thief. So I was searching that today, and then I was, you know, discovered that it was Bicycle Thieves.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, that's better, because I remember the first time I watched it realizing what the title was as when it was titled The Bicycle Thief, and I was like, oh, they don't mean the other guy, they mean Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt angry about that. And then watching it as Bicycle Thieves, I was like, oh, but it gives it away. Like, I was like, I don't know which one I like better, but then I kept going back and forth. So I think I like The Bicycle Thief, honestly, even though that's not the Italian translation and whatever, but I feel like it's more thematic or more like abstract. I don't know. That sounds weird. But like, it hits you different when you watch it as that title versus when you watch Bicycle Thieves, because you expect multiple thieves.
Right.
Or acts of thievery. I don't know.
Acts of thievery.
But I guess like towards the end, then you're like, oh, maybe it was just all the guys he was working with to get the bike. But then you go, oh, he's the other thief. Okay. It's about all these bicycle thieves. Which, like, obviously this movie hits you in different ways, but just in terms of like comparing it to what the title is, that was my emotion when it was Bicycle Thieves. And then The Bicycle Thief, you go, oh no, he's not a thief. He's not the bicycle thief, but it is. So I don't know. I just thought that maybe Bicycle Thief was more impactful.
Agree to disagree.
Okay, good, good. No, I like that. And you're right, though. It is, you know, the original title and the way it was intended. So
I don't think I ever answered your question of what I would do, though.
Oh, okay.
Do you want me to?
Yeah. Yeah, what would you have done?
If I have to choose between stealing a bike, I would have probably chosen to steal one from the many in that, you know,
okay,
bicycle rack, for the reasons you've stated.
Right?
But it's fucked up to think about stealing, you know, any property, any object that's not yours.
I know. I like felt bad that I gave it a lot of thought. I was like, okay, you'd really have to like act like you came out of the thing and then like go over to the thing and then be like, oh, I have to leave. If an officer came over, you'd be like, oh, I have to like leave early or something. I don't know. Or wait till the game is over and then like be like one of the first crowd out. I gave it too much thought, but I wanted him to take, even though I knew what it was at the end, how it played out, I wanted him to like go for one of the many.
You want him as the viewer, you want him to get the bike, whether it's his bike or just any bike back. You want him to have that opportunity to continue on with his job and supporting his family.
Yeah.
So I think you're sort of forced to make that decision too, of like what he should do. Thinking too about what the, is she a fortune teller? Is she a medium? Is she a...
I guess she's just a seer, a fortune teller, yeah, an advice giver, maybe. She's like telling this guy like she doesn't love you, which isn't really a fortune, I guess.
That was harsh.
She like all of a sudden like, you're very ugly. Went in on him. She was like, you're so ugly. I was like,
very ugly. It's like, okay.
It's like, I've seen uglier.
And this guy literally pays her just to tell her you're ugly.
And she's like, do you understand? You need to move on from this girl. She doesn't love you. And he's like, no, conosce or something. And she's like, capiche? And he's like, no, I don't get it. And she's like, she doesn't love you.
Very ugly.
Very ugly.
But when she gives the advice to Antonio and Bruno of, you know, you'll either find it right away or it's gone forever.
Yeah.
When Antonio steals the bike, immediately he is chased.
Yeah.
And almost immediately, just as soon as it's taken, it is returned back to the owner.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, kind of, she is telling the truth. She is proven right, both in that case. And right after she tells him that, Antonio sees the original thief.
Yeah.
Right after that encounter. So
yeah,
both scenarios come true. Antonio never gets his bike back, but the one that he tries to steal does get returned immediately to the owner.
That's interesting. It was almost like kind of putting it out there.
Yeah.
But not really, like, as an audience member, you don't really know how that other part might come into play yet. Or if just like, oh, it's gone because they didn't find it yet, you know?
Right.
That's interesting. Yeah. What an interesting character that fortune teller is.
Yeah.
What a weird like thing to add to this. But so I guess like to wrap up that, like, what would you have done? It's no question that both of us would have tried to steal a bike. right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're desperate, I think a lot of people are pushed. It's easy to say from a position of being comfortable or financially stable to say, like, I would never do that. But I think when you are put in a more vulnerable situation, when you are really struggling and don't have a lot of means or resources, you are more likely to
have to
steal.
Be desperate. Yeah.
Or, when you're desperate, do
whatever, you know,
right. Do what you need to do to get by.
Right. It might just be like figuring out any which way to get by. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
I, again, going back to the director casting amateur actors, I mean, I thought the actor that plays Antonio was amazing. And the fact that he didn't have formal experience, again, I think really works for this movie and for the character. And his face is just so expressive.
Yeah, I was really impressed with him.
I really just, every sort of emotion that he displays really kind of hit me. And I mean, in a sense, everybody is vulnerable in this movie that is depicted. But I found him, the way that the camera shows his face, he's just constantly vulnerable. He's just constantly kind of an open book. And that, again, I think added to my sadness for him and for what I was watching. Also, like, the character of Antonio is so sweet and unassuming. It does make watching those scenes where he's getting pushed around or he's getting dismissed or thrown out of, you know, this church, that much more hard to watch and sad to watch because he's a really sweet guy. He loves his family. He's trying to provide for them. And, you know, he doesn't come off menacing or, you know, feeling bad for himself or too hardened by the world, at least yet. So he's still trying to be polite and trying to be considerate, but it's just, it's hard when anybody's trying to give and they don't get anything back.
Yeah. And I feel like you slowly see him start to, like, cross lines that he may not have crossed before, like, you know, going into the church, and then he slowly like needs to talk to the guy. I'm going to sit next to him. Oh, I'm going to, like, keep raising my voice, and now I have to go chase him around the church. Like, it just keeps, like, escalating to the point where, like, other people are seeing him as that menace, but you as the viewer are like, no, he's not this person. And I guess that's just a lesson, like, just to keep taking with us, like, throughout our lives, like, you know, you don't know what someone's situation is, how their day is going. So just have a little bit more compassion and, you know, try to see how you could help someone who may seem like they're down on their luck a little bit.
No, exactly. It's easier said than done, but we all need to be more empathetic. We all need to really put ourselves in other people's shoes. And what would we do if we were in their situation?
Right. And, like, you know, how we react to some maybe odd or bad behaviors, you know, not saying that we should just let everyone walk all over us, but, like, you know, give that person a chance to explain maybe or something. And just see what the situation is, if they're willing to tell. Because if they really need help, they probably will tell you. And then you can decide, like, okay, I am in a position where I can help this person. And you're right, it is easy, like, when we're in a, you know, good place to be like, oh, sure, I'd help everyone. But when everyone's down on their luck, like, at that time, and sometimes, you know, in this time, it is a little bit more like, oh, you know, I need to look out for myself. It can end up like that.
Yeah. Getting to a dog-eat-dog world almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, opposite end of that, though. I found a quote that Antonio says. I can't remember it word for word, but it's basically like him and his son Bruno have been searching all day for the bike. They're clearly tired. And it's in the aftermath of Antonio slapping Bruno that they decide to go get, like, treat, basically Antonio's going to treat Bruno to a meal at a nice restaurant. And as they're walking to the restaurant, Antonio says something to the effect of, like, don't know why I'm going to kill myself trying to look for this bike when I'm still going to be dead anyway. Or something. I don't know if you're recall that line.
Oh, I don't know
line.
If I picked up on that. Oh my God.
But I took that to mean like, why do I, like, I can't really worry about this right now. I've been worrying about it so much. I might as well just enjoy my time. Like, I need to give myself a break. And like, that's why one of the reasons I found that scene, the next scene, so sweet, is because it is sort of a break from the stress and anxiety of looking for this bike. It's a tender moment between a father and a son, even though, yes, he's kind of unloading onto Bruno a lot of adult things.
Yeah.
It is sweet that they can share a meal together, share some libations, and yeah. have a moment of sort of calm and
just joyfulness. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Bruno eating that mozzarella sandwich. He's like every kid trying to eat mozzarella.
I know. It's so
it was
cute.
So cute.
I wanted a mozzarella sandwich.
Me too.
After that.
Me
I mean, too. So cute. But yeah, I think that's a good point. And I also took that at, I mean, I didn't pick up on that quote, but that scene to me, or like that whole thing of like him being like, all right, we're hungry. Let's just go get a pizza. Do you want a pizza? Okay. And
right.
that was such a real moment that I think I'm not a parent, but like any parent could relate to today.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, all right, we've been doing whatever it is for so long. That was like almost his give up moment. Let's just that was like his, again, I'm not a parent, but I'm equating it to like, all right, I've been trying all day to get this kid to like eat fucking broccoli. I'm just going to make him mac and cheese. I don't fucking care anymore. Like, I got to just get him food in his stomach so he doesn't starve. You know what I mean? Like, it was that moment where it's like, the powers that be will like do what they will. Like, he's kind of like almost given up in that moment. And
a little bit, yeah.
And surrendered to like, hey, like, what can we do? And yeah, then he unloads and then becomes more serious again. But it is a little bit like, oh, let's not worry about it for a minute. And then, you know, he kind of realizes like, I don't know how long I can run from this. Even if he doesn't continue searching for the bike, it's like, I don't know how long I can, you know, worry about this. I have to find another job or something like that. That's like, you know,
right.
That's what I felt from him in that moment.
Also, the scene where he thinks Bruno has drowned.
Oh, yeah.
I genuinely believed that he was drowning and thought, oh, my God, this movie has taken a turn I wasn't expecting.
Yeah. What did you make of that? Because afterwards, I was like, what were they really trying to get at? But I noted that it was after the scene where he, like, hits him. So I was like, does he think he, like, something? Like
That's what I got, that Bruno was so upset that I don't know if it's like meant to be a suicide, but maybe Bruno was just so sad that he kind of wandered into the water.
Uh-huh. Right, right.
And that doesn't happen, but that was one of the, I think, properly placed scenes that show clearly how guilty and much he loves his son. Like, mm-hmm. guilty for what he just did to his son, but also how much he loves him and
right.
And this immediate threat and fear he has of losing him.
And then, like, immediately after, he's like, no, put your jacket on. You're going to catch a chill.
Right.
Like,
and, like, let's go get a pizza.
Yeah.
Let's have some wine.
Yeah, yeah. That's really right. When he's like, all right, we've had a day. Like, you know, let's chill out. Also, in that restaurant scene, the, like, contrast between this like big rich family like eating all the things, they have another bottle of wine, they all get desserts, like they're all eating the pasta, like the way that they go back and forth between, okay, I thought it was a little girl, but maybe then David was like, is it a little girl? Maybe it's a little boy that they're like comparing, like eating the cheese.
I thought it was a little girl too, but regardless, a young child of a very wealthy family.
Because then I was like, is their hair short in the back? Like, I couldn't tell. But anyway, a young kid. I just thought that was interesting. And then Antonio says something like, oh, well, if you actually want to eat like them, because he's trying to mimic like what the kid did.
Yeah.
And he's like, if you actually want to eat like them, you have to make like this amount of money. And then I was like, ooh, that's like
heavy. I know it is heavy. And I think that's one of the things that, because prior to that, Antonio is sort of in this state of just like relief of like there is some freedom and just sort of saying, yeah, I put my hands up and I am ridding myself of the situation, even if it's only temporary. Because you do sort of see him smile and laugh and be present and joyous for a brief time. Because prior to this, we've just been seeing him run around and be stressed, and understandably so. Yeah. But I do think him noticing Bruno watching this rich family eat sort of brings him back down.
Yeah.
And makes him realize, I need my bike back. I can't let this go. Right. I need to fight for my family because we won't be able to eat in a week if I don't get it back.
Right. Ugh. So kind of to wrap up, you know, like I said in the beginning, this is on many a list for like, you know, one of the greatest films of all time. And, you know, if not that, on a list of important films to see, you know, as a student of film. So I'm curious if you think that it deserves to be on, you know, those kinds of lists and why.
Yes, 100%.
After seeing it, yeah.
Yeah, this movie is amazing. I know we've been talking about how sad it is, and
I know
it might not sound intriguing, but it really is a masterpiece. It is a work of art. It is a beautiful piece of cinema and a very sweet, heart-wrenching story. Mm-hmm. That, yes, it's in Italian, yes, it takes place in Italy, yes, it's from the 1940s, post-World War II, but there's so many themes, especially, you know, of struggle, of trying to find what's yours, of fighting for your family, that you can relate to even now. Yes, it's of its time, but it's also timeless.
That is such a great point. I 100% agree. It's like those lessons and the feeling that even we were getting watching it, yeah, just transcends like the age that it was in. I mean, you know, unfortunately, like we're in a tough time now, but I think even I remember the first time watching it, it was probably like 2014 or 15. And, you know, obviously that time was very different in this country, but, my heart's still broken and you still understood those, lessons and the themes of the film. And yeah, I agree with you 100%. You couldn't have said it better. Like it's timeless. And I think that's why it kind of still
holds up
and yeah, holds water. Like a lot of movies from like, you know, really, really old movies, they're kind of seem a little disjointed or the lessons might not, you know, you're not really sure what people are getting at. And I just think this really like, you could kind of watch it at any time. And I think anyone above a certain age would be able to like understand it and really like take a lot away from it.
Exactly. Also, I don't know if we talked about it. It's beautifully shot. Yes, it's in black and white, so you're not seeing maybe all the vibrant colors. Again, I haven't been to Rome, so I don't know how colorful Rome is. I'm sure it's quite colorful, but it just is beautiful. It looks, and yes, we're seeing, you know, people struggle. We're seeing crowded marketplaces and rainy, you know, streets and gritty, hard life.
Yeah.
But in that realisticness is beauty, because that is how things were then. And that is how things can still look now. I just found that really striking and really moving.
No, yeah. And yeah, I think like, again, there's something so beautiful about black and white film that it's just really raw almost. And, you know, we haven't done a lot of that obviously on the podcast yet. So it was fun. But also, yeah, I mean, you know, it's of its time. So there's some things where you're like, that was a weird edit, or like the car scene where it looks, you know, whatever. But in general, like I was impressed with the camera work and like, you know, I know this sounds weird. It's very direct and very pointed, but it gets across what it's trying to get across. And
right.
I know that sounds maybe obvious, like that's what movies are supposed to do, but there wasn't a lot of superfluous things. And there's, you know, very pointed shots of, you know, Antonio and Bruno going through this journey and, you know, interacting with the people along the way, and the framing of them in those scenarios, I think, is done very well.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah.
This is a great movie. It's a wonderful movie. I love it. And I've only seen it once, mere hours ago. I highly, highly recommend.
Yes.
Those that are listening to go watch it if you haven't seen it. And if you have seen it before and you didn't like it, watch it again. Maybe you'll reconsider your initial negative thoughts of it, because this is truly a wonderful, amazing movie.
It really is. I echo every sentiment that Avril just expressed.
And if you don't cry, you're not human.
I didn't cry, you guys. It's okay.
I'm just kidding.
If you don't feel anything, then you're a robot. But if you didn't cry, that's fine.
I think I needed a good cry in this movie.
Yeah.
Was an excuse for that. All right. So that wraps up our conversation on Bicycle Thieves, aka The Bicycle Thief.
Yep.
Next week, we will be discussing The Color Purple and why Haley hasn't seen that.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Like, super, super shame on me that I haven't seen this at this point. But we're really excited to get into that next week. And just before we truly wrap up, I have a quick tidbit that is related to one of our episodes from season one, the Angus Song is a Perfect Snogging episode. So we were discussing of that, like, Aaron Tyler Johnson, who plays Robbie, you know, I knew him from Angus Thongs, and then you knew him from Kick-Ass. But we were like, what's he been doing? Like, what's up? Well, this weekend, I just watched Avengers 2, because it was, according to David, one of the movies that was not great, and I didn't need to see Avengers 2. However, for one reason or another, we decided to watch Avengers 2, and
as we do.
But yes, we decided to watch Avengers 2, and lo and behold, this guy is on screen, and I'm like, who is this guy? I recognize him. It is Aaron Tyler.
It is
Aaron Tyler Johnson, basically as an Avenger. And I was like super excited. He's only in this film, so you wouldn't know it unless you saw the Avengers 2, have you?
I haven't.
Okay.
And I'm surprised, if he's an Avenger, why he wasn't in other films after that.
I can't tell you.
Not that you know the answer to that.
I do know the answer to that.
Or you do? Okay.
There
okay.
is a reason for that, and I
okay.
don't want to spoil
it. Oh, I think I know what
okay.
you're about
so,
to
okay. anyway, it's anyway, I just thought that was a fun fact that everyone needed to know, that Robbie is also, I forget his name. It's not Flash, but he can basically run really fast.
Maybe it is. Oh, no, Flash is DC.
I know. But basically, he can like run really fast. But he is basically an Avenger. So that's pretty cool. Good for him. And now all that's really left to say after that tidbit is thank you guys so much for listening. Please follow us on Instagram at SeenThatPod. That's at SCENE, like movie scene, that pod. And you know, for the remainder of Black History Month and probably the rest of the season, probably
we're almost halfway there.
Yeah, we will be including links and resources to help you guys shop Black owned businesses. And those will be in the captions of each Instagram post. So please follow us there. Keep listening to us on Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. And please follow us on those platforms as well, so you get notified every time there's a new Seen That episode. And remember, we're all in this together. Please stay safe, guys. Stay warm. It's cold. Everyone, there's like a winter storm warning everywhere, so just be safe.
Like as far as Texas, even.
Yeah. So stay warm. Get the shovels and salt out. Double up your masks. Good way to stay warm. And we love you, and I love Avril. And happy Valentine's Day, you guys.
Yes, happy Valentine's Day. regardless of your relationship status.
It's about love in all forms.
All
my Valentine's Day was pretty much about me and my cat, so that's how that went.
My Valentine's Day was about me and my girlfriend.
Valentine's Day. Fun.
Valentine's Day. And what a wonderful way to end it with you and recording this episode.
I know.
Truly. Truly mean that.
Really? No. Icing on the cake this Valentine's Day. So eventful.
Yes. Exactly. Well, I love you, Haley. I love you all. And ciao a tutti.
Ciao, ragazzi.
Wow, Haley, as somebody who's fully American Italian, you cannot pronounce their names for shit.